Well, this is a two-year-old story, but then archaeologists in Iraq believe that they found the lost tomb of King Gilgamesh, the subject, of course, of the oldest book in history. The Epic of Gilgamesh, written by a Middle Eastern scholar about 2,500 years before the birth of Christ, commemorated the life of the ruler of the city of Uruk, from which Iraq gets its name. Now, the German-led expedition, this is 2 years ago now, that led the discovery, thought that they found the entire city of Uruk, including where the Euphrates once flowed, the last resting place of its famous king. They basically say they don't definitely want to say it was the grave of King Gilgamesh, but they think it might have been. In the book, actually a set of inscribed clay tablets, Gilgamesh was described as having been buried under the Euphrates in a tomb apparently constructed when the waters of the ancient river parted following his death. And they said that they found outside the city in an area in the middle of the former Euphrates River the remains of such a building, which could be interpreted as a burial site. Marshall, fascinating story about Gilgamesh that they may have found a couple of years ago. Was there any new updates to that, do you know?
You know, I just vaguely heard that story, George, and I never was able to follow up on it. I would be fascinated if they could, because I know there was his father and there was the son.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that the book was written about the son.
You could get some Anunnaki DNA out of this. Wouldn't that be something?
Wow. Well, you know, I have a suspicion that Pakal down in...
Lord Pakal, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was an Anunnaki.
He might have been.
Because that tomb that they found him in, no way could that have been built by the local folks.
Well, I have a feeling they were all over this planet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were everywhere, because these similarities of civilizations all around this planet, it's just too uncanny.
Right.
You also checked in a little bit on crystal skulls. Tell me about that.
Okay, the reason I put that in the book is I was fascinated by it. I read the book on its history, and, of course, from a mechanical sense, the Hewlett-Packard folks took and examined this hunk of crystal that was carved in the form of a skull, and they couldn't find any marks on it. And that just opened my eyes to, well, okay, some technology created mm-hmm. that we don't know about, and it was carved against the grain of the crystals, and the fact that the jaw was removable was intriguing to me, because if you look at the numbering system that the whoever they were used, the skull with the jaw is a 10, and without the jaw, it's a 0. And the Mayans, I guess, were the first ones to so-called contribute 0 to the numbering system.
The Mayans again in that year 2012.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen there.
Their calendar. But, George, contemplate on this. You can store. That's the same material used in computers, the crystal.
Right.
And it's a storage device. And if they talked about, in my research, they called the MEs. And the MEs were the ones that contained all the information necessary to do da-da-da-da-da. How'd they store it? How do they store the information?
And then how do they extract it once they store
right.
it?
Right. So there may be, you know, if we could, and I think that they didn't use binary codes like we do on our computers, you know, on, off, on, off. And I think maybe the 0 to 10 has a clue. The jaw of this crystal skull being removable may be the clue that they had a number 10 system that they used as their coding, encoding. I don't know. There's just all kinds of speculation.
All right, let's go to the phones. You ready?
Sure.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. George?
Yes, sir.
This is Georgie.
Hey, Georgie.
I still haven't heard from my daughter, Sabrina. I'm still hoping, though.
Well, I hope it works out for you.
But I've had a theory that I've thought a lot about. Now, it seems as though there's just far too much material in the asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
For that to have been, you know, a piece of Earth. What if the asteroid belt is actually the planet X that was destroyed, because Mars, isn't Mars called the God of War?
Yep.
What if they decided, you know, we don't like you interfering with our, you know, with our life, so they decided to destroy that planet?
But, you know, it's an interesting theory. Marshall, you don't agree with that, that this Planet X, Nibiru, whatever it may be, blew up. Richard C. Hoagland just sent me a quick message, and he said, you might not be that far off, George, because he does believe that some planet blew up. He's not sure what. You don't believe that, though.
No, no. I mean, anything is possible, George. I'm not... in concrete on this decision, but I will say that the story that I have been able to put together from the history of Enuma Elish, what originally happened, has to have some bearing on what the results were.
What about George's thought, the caller, about the fact that the asteroid belt is not enough? There aren't just there's too much there to have just come from the planet.
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen any evidence of anybody counting all those pieces of material out there and adding up how much it was.
Well, that's true. That's true. Next up, first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Where are you calling from?
Oh, hi. This is Corey. I'm calling from Toronto. How
hey,
you doing?
Corey, good.
Good, good. Big fan, George.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, we're trying to get Celine Dion on the show for 1 hour, and she loves you people in Toronto.
Great, great, great.
I think she's from up that way. She's from Montreal or Toronto?
I think it's Montreal.
Okay.
Yeah, she's bilingual, so.
All right, go ahead, take it away.
Well, pretty much, I was interested in your thoughts about this, George, because a while back you had on a guy called Michael Therion. And
yes.
There's a lot of parallels between his theory and Marshall's. I mean, he had the aliens coming in to another planet, which is Earth, and they were kind of sexual, warlike people, highly intelligent, and that they kind of made humans as servants. So I just wondered if Marshall knew about that, and how did those theories kind of match up? And I found it interesting, too, because during the commercial, they said they had Gilgamesh buried under the Euphrates.
Yeah.
And I believe he said the same thing, that I know he called him the Nephilim. So I'm just wondering if Marshall knew about that and what he thinks about it.
Okay, George. I heard that program. I heard your interview with Michael, and I was fascinated by his coming from this other direction with kind of similar material. Like, I agree that the Nephilim are the Anunnaki, but he's got some information that I have no clue about. I mean, I just haven't gotten into that. I use a time frame and a background based on what Sitchin has deciphered from the cuneiform tablets, and what the physical evidence tells us. It may be that Michael's on to something, and I should look into it. But for now, I reserve my judgment.
You know, when we were genetically altered to create us as workers to help dig their gold so they could sprinkle it in their atmosphere, and then they left, do you think they've, assuming they're still around, have they been back? Have they tried to re-genetically alter us, or did they just simply leave us alone?
Well, you know, I've heard people ask that question and speculate on it. I don't think so. I don't think they're invisible. I don't think that they're so much different in their physical size than we are that they would be very obvious. It'd be like, you know, unless they played on some basketball team, we would recognize them as being unusual. They are taller and bigger. I mean, you know, the sons of, if you read your Greek stories of Achilles and Hector and those guys, I think they were products of this marriage between the Anunnaki. And they were big, tall, strong people. Huge.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name's Ron. I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hello, Ron. Go ahead.
You know, when I first tuned in, you were talking about when Nibiru would return. And Nibiru has come. And Nibiru was Hale-Bopp. And I'll tell you why I think so. It's about 5 years ago, I went to one of Zechariah's seminars in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And it was a three-day affair, and he went over all of his writings and talked about them. And at the end of the thing, for the afternoon, he entertained questions. Now, I had watched very clearly for several months in the night skies of Houston, Texas, Hale-Bopp coming by. And it had two fan-like tails, and it was just like a bright white softball. And I had read his books, of course, and when I went to the seminar, one of the questions I asked, because it strikingly resembled one of the glyphs that he showed in his books of Nibiru, or Marduk, whichever one you want to call it. And so one of my questions that I gave to him was that, is Nibiru, was Hale-Bopp Nibiru, or is Nibiru Hale-Bopp? And typical Sitchin, he didn't answer the question. He just draws you to the conclusions if you've read his books. He doesn't tell you what to believe. He just presents it.
Sure.
And so what he did was he had an overhead projector, just an old-fashioned one, and he took an acetate overlay and laid it down and said, now here is NASA's drawings of the orbit of Hale-Bopp and all of the other planets in our solar system. And then, you know, the stone, that 3,800-year-old stone that has all of the planets that he showed in his book.
Right.
And
the Sumerian one, yeah.
Yeah, well, and it also has Nibiru's orbit on it. And he took that and put the one on top of the other.
Did it match?
And they matched perfectly. So, you know, that's the way he answered the question. And it was just astounding to me. And, you know, you've had other things that you've gone over that I'd like to discuss with you, but I just can't remember them. But
let me ask you, if Planet X or Nibiru was the comet Hale-Bopp, that doesn't explain then how the Anunnaki got here or where they came from, does it?
Well, surely it does.
They couldn't have come from a comet.
Well, Hale-Bopp is not a comet. Hale-Bopp is Nibiru.
Oh, so what you're saying is that it was always just the planet that was interpreted as being a comet, but it never was.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that's what I think he showed, and it fits in pretty well with what happened at Roswell.
All right, let's get Marshall's take on it, okay?
Okay, may I follow up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Marshall.
Well, that's very interesting. First time I've heard it, and Zachariah presented the answer that way. He was not coming out and endorsing it, and I can't, of course, comment on it at all because I have no clue or no background on how that could have happened. I know that the comets circle our solar system in a clockwise fashion because that's the way Nibiru came in. Nibiru came in, and when it impacted Tiamat, produced the asteroid belt, and the comets took off in a clockwise fashion like it. It's everything else in our system goes counterclockwise. All our planets rotate counterclockwise around the sun. And so it's possible, George.
You can't rule it out. All right, follow up there, Ron.
Okay, yes. The reason I think this could be true is when you read his things, he proposes that on the inbound flight, they would cross over to Earth when it came near. And on the outbound flight, those who were going to go back home on the planet would go back out. And whoever was left would stay here. Well, that would coincide pretty nicely with 1947 when all of these things began to show up around Roswell and previous to that in other parts of the world.
Well, I can comment on that, George.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ron. Go ahead.
The dialogue that I've read is that they were here for so long that there was a question whether they could survive if they went back to Nibiru. In other words, they had to make an adjustment to our atmosphere and our gravity, and our sun was much hotter than they were used to on their planet. And in fact, the reason that they chose the landing platform in Lebanon, it was in the mountains where it was cooler. And that there was this question, could they go back? Would they die if they went back? And, you know, they were kind of semi-immortal. And they, I don't know. It's a one of those unanswerable questions.
I mean, they, when you said semi-immortal, how long do you think they did live?
I don't know. I mean, they obviously lived hundreds of thousands of years because they were here 450,000 years ago.
Well, as a race or as an individual, did they live that long? I can't believe somebody lived 100,000 years.
Well, wait a minute. If one of their years is 3,600 years, you know, it takes their planet 3,600 years to go around the sun. That's
right.
1 year. They call that a char. And so that makes, you know, 100 of their years means they lived to be 360,000 years.
Yeah, is that actual time or just semantics here?
We're talking Einstein here.
All right. It's over my head.
It's over my head, too, George. I mean, I
guess let's say they lived a long time.
They lived a long time, and it was the thing that Gilgamesh wanted. He wanted to be the immortal, and they used the word immortal, meaning they lived a lot longer than the people that lived here on Earth because they died off, you know, 30 years, 40 years.
West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
It's Mr. Bill after 6 months.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
And I have a few statements and then a question for Marshall.
All right. And I may hold you over for the break, but go ahead.
Okay. Marshall, are you aware of all the terms that you've used tonight? Noob area, Anunnaki, all those terms, Gilgamesh. Do you know where those original terms came from in examining history and languages and how we have come to the point where we are now believing in myths and legends if you haven't studied the original languages like Tutankhamun and Amon-Hontop and all those names from Egypt and Greece and all those gods and all the mythology? Have you studied the languages like Nephilim was borrowed by the Hebrews from the Canaanites, incorporated into the Bible, which was translated by Catholics who didn't know how to even translate that word? The word El Elohim, Yahweh, all the different names. And I'm just asking you, have you done your research into languages apart from myths?
Well, I think that the languages that are pertinent to what I've used come directly from Sumerian. The Sumerian language was totally different than any other language on the planet. The words have many meanings. In other words, the words could be interpreted 3, 4, 5 different ways in how they were used in their sentence structures.
Before the Sumerians.
Pardon?
Before the Sumerians.
Who was before the Sumerians?
According to the latest scientific archaeological finds, this word that's floating around through planet Earth is Gilgamesh, and the Sumerians are the oldest records, the oldest texts, the oldest scribes, the oldest stones that we have.
Right.
So you examine what happened, and the world is now has on archaeological discoveries, but they're still putting it out through the news that Gilgamesh is the oldest story.
And you're saying not so.
Not so.
Who's before them?
You're using the words Adamu, which was Adam, which means blood in the face.
Well, hold on, Bill, because I want to ask you when we come back who you think came before the Sumerians. I want to know. Let's go back to Bill in Tucson. Bill, who might have been around before the Sumerians then?
No, I wasn't around before the Sumerians.
No, not you.
You know what, George? I have to tell everybody in America and throughout the world that I do not have a degree in anything. I'm a person who researches apart from everything that everyone else because I bother to check everyone out. But I've studied the languages and these names, and I think I called you a year ago and said, George, have you put together all the dots? From the aliens to the Gilgamesh to the Anunnaki to Nibiria to the aliens to Satanism to Christianity to Judaism. I'm just trying to share facts with Marshall. If you do not read and study, and I don't have a degree, I simply have a library card.
Well, you have a darn good one, huh?
I don't look to the internet. I don't look to the TV or the radio. I do look to George on the radio. Sorry.
That's okay.
But I go back and a four-year-old child can be taught to put all these names together. Gilgamesh, no one ever talks about Sargon.
No.
Sargon of Babylon.
Yes,
who was the greatest ruler of Babylon. Well, Samaria didn't last for very long because Babylon came along and lasted a long time after that.
But the Samaritans Sargon were before the Babylonians.
Who were the Babylonians?
No, the Sumerians came before the Babylonians.
But where did the Sumerians come from, Marshall?
Well, that's what we're talking
about. They came from the
about.
Gate of the gods, and that's what Babel means. The Christians have taught the world that Babel means confusion. No, the word Bab means gate. The word El means God. The Hebrews borrowed it and started calling Yahweh Elohim, which means he was many gods, and that's where the Trinity came from. Bab El means the gate of the gods. And Sumerians borrowed it because every archaeological scientist on earth will tell you the original civilization came, and it wasn't Erech. You've misspelled it. It was Erech. E-R-E-C-H-H in the ancient language. Erech.
Yeah, the one I see is spelled U-R-U-K. Fascinating, nonetheless. I got to take this break. Marshall, in the book, Adam, you mentioned a little bit about Easter Island. Want to comment on that?
Yes, I think my research led me to believe that if you are orbiting the Earth, planet Earth, around the equator, you're going to have a light phase and a dark phase. It splits in half.
Sure.
And, if you need to have a beacon for navigation, when the pyramids go in the dark side, you've lost the sun reflecting off of them. But interestingly enough, just 12 hours away is Easter Island. You know, it's in the middle of nowhere as far as the
sure.
location in the Pacific. But the little statues had eyes of polished coral, and the heads tilted up, and I'm sure that there was a reflective beam that was detectable from space on all those statues with their eyes pointing to the east and upward.
They all had a purpose, didn't they?
So that was kind of a beam, you know, another beacon. Newgrange was a beacon, and I think that these navigational aids, there was the Plain of Jars, I think was maybe one, and then in a place called Carnac, France, there was over 3,000 pieces of stone that reflected.
Other than height, do you think we resemble the Anunnaki?
Oh, yes. We are them.
Okay.
George. I mean, we are them, and my book, I've come to the conclusion since I wrote the book and published it, that Adam is the missing link. In other words, the archaeologists are looking for this bones between Homo erectus and Homo sapien.
That's Adam, you're saying.
It is Adam. I'm sure now that it's Adam.
Do you think we have still been visited by other beings?
Could be, George.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, there's evidence in China of another species that came down.
You know, it's also possible, too, if we are genetically altered, who's to say the Anunnaki has not gone to other planets in other systems?
Mm-hmm.
Very possible.
Well, who made them, you know?
Oh, exactly. And then go back to who made them and them. Goes
yeah,
on forever.
Right.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
My name is Teresa Tatham. I'm calling from Piedmont, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to ask Marshall if he had considered wormhole technology or the Gate of the Gods. There are numerous references throughout different religions of the Gate of the Gods or wormhole iconology. And in the Hebrew religion, well, the Kabbalist religion, they say that there are 13,000 inhabitable planets. And I just wondered, you know, had he considered maybe that Nibiru was, you know, a stop-off and not actually the planet that these people came from.
Well, the story that I have, and that's a very interesting question, I thank you for it, The way I put it together was that it was free in space. In other words, it was floating free from a solar system that probably blew up and it got ejected. And we see that happening now with our telescopes. And since it had its own internal heat from its core, it came by our solar system and was captured by Neptune's gravity. It's very definitely stated in Enuma Elish, which is the creation story of the Anunnaki. And then it came in. In other words, it was pulled in, and as it passed by, it tilted planets on their side. You know, all the strangeness that we've been struggling with trying to understand over the years of how our solar system looks can be explained by this intruder. And it's still with us, I think. I don't see any evidence that it's not there any longer, that it was captured into our solar system, became part of our solar system. There is a whole host of things going on way beyond Pluto. In other words, if you look at the current information coming from our astronomers, that there's a whole bunch of planets that they could find back out there in the Oort system. So that's the best explanation I can offer. I'm sure there's room for other interpretations because it's still kind of a mystery to all of us. We are trying to piece it together. We are trying to gather as much as we can and make the pieces fit. In Adam, the Missing Link, I've tried to connect the dots on the physical evidence that exists here on our planet of things that we have that you can go up to and touch and feel and kick around and say, well, where the heck did that come from? And when you sum it all up, my conclusion is that that was the extraterrestrial workmanship, not us.
And you're not alone in that thought, Marshall. Next up,
Thank you, George.
The Rockies. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
Yes, hi. My name's Ian. I'm from New York.
Hello, Ian.
I heard you two talking about where you think the Anunnakis went.
Yeah.
And I actually came across some different research what suggests maybe what happened with God Yahweh, Jehovah. They actually had a fight, and the winners was God Yahweh, and they left probably around 2000 BC. And actually, if you ever heard of the man on the moon, that might where Anunnaki, one of their small bases, might be. And there has been an ongoing war for the ownership of, you know, humanity.
Well,
and
you might be right about that. Ingo Swann, the great remote viewer, claims that he has seen, by remote viewing, bases on the moon.
And I have, a huge document and a check on the website and get your email address, and I'll send it to you.
Okay.
And it goes into it really far, and it's pretty much where Sitchin left off.
All right, well, you can email it to me, Ian, if you want.
Okay.
At george@coasttocoastam.com.
Okay.
All right, great. I'd like to see it. Let's go first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
I just had a couple of theories. One about this planet taking 3,600 years to orbit our sun,
sure.
I guess it would be. Well, if it takes that long, then we might see it coming, say, 100 years before it gets close enough to where they would transport from planet to planet.
Very possible. Maybe
sure.
Even a little farther away.
Yeah, we might surprise them and actually fly out to them this time.
If it's still out there.
Yeah.
And if there's still civilization existing on the planet.
Well, if they're so advanced, though, why wouldn't there be?
Well, they could have destroyed themselves, just like we might.
Yeah.
You know, we're pretty advanced.
Good point. Or they could have been Hail Bob,
right.
Like the caller said. It's already gone.
Yeah. No, the one thing we really need to think seriously about is that we're at our space age, and as Richard Feynman told me years and years and years ago, that these other civilizations out in the universe, if they survived their space age, they could have come here. Now, what do you think he was talking about was that things can happen when you get technically to a certain point. You can wipe yourself out.
Yeah.
And it's probably happened time and time again, too.
Yeah. We've got to really protect ourselves against ourselves.
One other point, quick point, George.
Sure.
The Homo erectus was a hairy being, and the Anunnaki was a giant being. Do you
right.
think that maybe Bigfoot was a botched...
you know what? That is a great point. You know, that it's very possible. When you were talking, Marshall, about the possibility that the Adam was the perfected version, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what if all these Sasquatch sightings and things could have been...
Hominids yeah. are in that equation. And by the way, in the things that I've read, George, they made a lot of mistakes before they got Adam. That didn't come out.
That's what I'm saying. What if they are Bigfoot, you know, running all over the planet now?
Yeah, could be.
Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
This is AJ from Portland.
Go ahead, AJ.
I've got a question for Mr. Clairfield. I'm sure this is a question you get often, but I want to ask it anyway. How do these creatures, the Anunnaki, survive? How do they develop on a planet that has such varying orbital periods as Nibiru? Sometimes it is close to the sun, other times it is very far. Wouldn't this cause extreme temperature fluctuations such that no living thing could withstand the climactic inconsistencies?
Might have had its own internal heat source. Marshall, what do you think?
Yes, I think their atmosphere, the reason they were so panicked and came here, I think, was that if they lost their shield, which was their atmosphere, they couldn't survive those fluctuations. In other words, they had an ability to live and survive out in the coldness of the end of the 3,600-year orbit, but when they came into the moon, it got pretty hot. I mean, came into the sun area, it got pretty hot, and they were able to shield themselves and survive. And what they talked about when they got here on our planet was that it was very hot for them, particularly in Iraq area where they were colonizing the place.
Well, it's going to get hot again there.
You got...
Next up, first-time caller line, it's your turn. Hi there.
Hi. Yes, my name is Jen, and I'm calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
I'm enjoying the depth of curiosity of the speaker.
Makes the mind wonder, doesn't it?
Marshall, yes. And I do have a question. I am an artist and have an interest in art, and I'm wondering if Marshall could say something about the role that he sees that the arts might play in disseminating this story or this information.
Well, that's a great question.
Illustrate your book, Marshall.
Well, the art that I think Jennifer is referring to is something that is a wonderful way to get information back and forth on our planet. It's an important contribution to the entire scheme of things, and the book does have pictures. They're not, you know, artists created pictures, but I think the question is, can it make us better? And I think, yes, my answer would be that yes, and thank you for the question.
East of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Eli. I'm from Duluth, Minnesota.
Sure, Eli, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I do believe, like, Sitchin's theories, but my problem with it is Nibiru couldn't support life because it's, you know, Earth could support life because it's near the sun, but this planet would be leaving the solar system. How could that support life?
Well, our spaceships leave this, you know, go out into space and are equipped to support life. There are ways, technology ways, that we probably haven't even considered yet that will help us in the future when we travel deep into space, because we need to have time and we need to have propulsion, we need to have food supplies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have to kind of look at planets that support life as huge spaceships. Nibiru is a huge spaceship. Planet Earth is a huge spaceship. You know, if you go outside our atmosphere, it's bloody cold.
Yeah. See.
And just because we're positioned... by the way, George, one of the interesting things is they counted from the outside in. They called us the seventh planet.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because they were counting from
what they could see, yeah, from the outside.
Right. I mean.
Okay, Eli, thanks for your call. Maybe time for one or two more. West of the Rockies, you're up. Hi there.
Yes, this is John Holderman calling.
Hi, John. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bonnie Lake, Washington.
Washington, sure.
And this is not a denominational religious question, but it does, as a matter of fact, have to do with God being Alpha and Omega and Jesus saying that without him nothing was made seen or unseen. And also that the skull have to do possibly with the rocks would cry out truth if we as men would be silent to the truth. And that the earth was void without form, and at the renovation of the earth, could not the asteroid belt have been created at that time?
When do you think the asteroid belt was created, Marshall?
When Nibiru came into our solar system.
And then it from Earth.
Yes, well, Tiamat was the fourth planet, and it was the collision took place, and it was probably early. And that's another important thing, George, is how we got DNA on our planet. The DNA that existed from another planet could have been seeded to our planet by a collision of this type. And if our planet didn't have any DNA, you know, it could have been seeded during this collision.
Well,
so life really could have come from outer space.
How do people get the book, Adam the Missing Link?
You can go to my webpage, George. It's www.adamthemissinglink.com, and there's instructions on how to order on that page.
Okay, is it a downloadable book?
Yes, I have three options on the page. You can download as an ebook. You can order a hard copy, which is the coffee table version, very very nice. And then there's the CD of Gilgamesh, which is also available on that page.
If I had to say download one more time, I would have sounded like Daffy Duck. Hey, Marshall, thanks for being on the program.
Well, thank you, George. I've enjoyed it. And if you are in need of a guest in the future, please call me.
Okay, always will. That's okay. Marshall Kleifeld. Kareffeld. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition with guest Sean David Morton. Until then, be safe, everyone.